Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast, hosted by Renita Ray Davis, licensed clinical social worker, board-approved social work clinical supervisor, and facilitator of the Goddesses of Social Work supervision community. Join us as we travel through the social work journeys told by the Goddesses of Social Work community members, past and present, as they make their way toward clinical licensure.
Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast and our special series highlighting speakers and guests of the upcoming Affirming Our Presence Behavioral Conference, June 20th to the 23rd, 2024 in Plano, Texas. I am your host, Renita Ray Davis, and I'm here today with Portia S. Rouse, LCSW, LCSWC, who will be a panel speaker at the Affirming Our Presence Conference. Portia S. Rouse, the social worker, meaning she does what she can from her soul to make yours feel whole. Portia is an alum of Johnson C. Smith University, where she began her social work journey. She moved to Baltimore for graduate school, and though licensed in Maryland and in North Carolina, identifies herself first as a Baltimore social worker. Why? Because if it wasn't for Baltimore, she wouldn't be as great of a social worker as she is today. Portia currently serves in many social work roles, but her greatest role is to be something and someone to herself before she can be anything to anyone else. Welcome to the show, Portia.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you. And I know that you're about to ask me these questions, but I wanted to give you your flowers because you are doing so many interviews and you are awesome as well. So thank you so much for doing this and having me today.
Thank you, Portia. I appreciate that. I am about to ask you a bunch of questions. It's my favorite thing to do. I actually, though, Portia, loved reading your bio, and I love the tagline, social worker. Can you tell me more about where that came from?
So I actually used to say I do everything from my soul to make sure yours is whole, and then I realized I wasn't practicing what I preach by setting boundaries and teaching others to do that as well. So I switched it up and I said, I do what I can for my soul to allow you to be in a space where yours is whole as well. So that's where social worker came from. I know other people use it now, but I definitely have been using it for a very long time. But I'm very passionate about social work. I love all things social work related. Sometimes I'm like, do I really want to continue social work? And then I go even deeper into social work. So that's where it came from. I used to have a business called Minds Over Matter, and I closed it, and it's still, social worker still stuck with me. So some people might not know my name, but they'll remember social worker.
I love it. I some other people might be using it, but I had never seen it before. When I saw it, I was like, oh, I love that so much. But you know what I love about your answer, Portia? It's, I was telling others to do this, but I wasn't doing it for myself. And I talk to social workers about that all the time, because that's where imposter syndrome comes from. Like, we'll tell our clients to journal, or we'll tell them to exercise or to do the things that help with their mental health and their well-being, but we're not practicing it. And so it sounds like you start taking care of your soul, and now you can more easily help others take care of theirs.
Right, exactly.
I love that so much. And so you are in Baltimore. You're going to tell us why Baltimore made you a Baltimore social worker, but I am an NFL fan, and I love me some Lamar Jackson. Do you ever see
Ravens
him?
Nation.
Yes.
So I have personally never seen Lamar, but I do know that he is in the community a lot. So I do love that about the Ravens, that they really show up in our communities. They show up in our schools. And they really just look out for the community holistically. They go to the same restaurants we go to. So I love me some Ravens. Ravens Nation. And we're going to win this year, okay?
Yes, we're going to win. And his mama is doing some amazing things, this beautiful Black queen as well. So if you ever see her, wave for me.
I sure will. Now, I love me some Zay Flowers. So.
Yes.
I don't know why. He just make everybody love him a little bit.
I love it. It just sounds like Baltimore is such a great place to live. And so before I jump in, because I want to know how Baltimore made you such an amazing social worker, you can get to that, but please just let's go ahead and dig into your social work journey.
Okay, sure. So I have my bachelor's of social work from Johnson C. Smith University. And what I tell everybody is the absolute truth. Johnson C. Smith made me a social worker, period. And the University of Maryland, Baltimore taught me how to navigate white spaces that were not built for us. So I did not have a grand graduate school experience, but I did have an amazing experience at Johnson C. Smith. And everything I learned, I was able to utilize in graduate school and as a social worker. So I became a Baltimore social worker right after I stayed local. So a lot of people don't know, but there are different areas in the country or the world, I suppose, where people will say, no, this is this city and then this is this state. But Baltimore is one of those places where if you meet people, they'll be like, the DMV. The DMV is not Baltimore. The DMV is DC, Maryland, and Virginia, which is further up. But Baltimore is Baltimore. So it's completely different. We live a different lifestyle here. We learn different things here. The different lingo here, being a Baltimore social worker and in the community has been one of the most amazing experiences. And I say that because that means I can be a social worker anywhere because I'm a Baltimore social worker. Because they will vet you immediately and teach you how to take things and run with it. So I'm very prideful about being a Baltimore social worker versus just licensed in Maryland, because there are different places in Maryland that don't experience what Baltimore experiences. But Baltimore is a gem that's hidden in plain sight. It's so much treasure here, and people don't want to honor Baltimore because they've seen The Wire, or they see what's on the news, or they hear about the uprising, and they say that it was rioting, but it really was an uprising, and it was actually amazing how it came together. Maybe everything wasn't amazing that came out of it, but it was amazing how it came together, and there's so much talent here that people just forget.
Absolutely. You know what? I resonate with that so much because that's how I feel about New Orleans. There's New Orleans and then there's Louisiana. You know, you can say you're from New Orleans, but or you can say you're from Louisiana, but are you from New Orleans? And their experience with Katrina and all of that has really defined that, well, even before Katrina, but really defined that city, and it separates them from all of Louisiana. And so I love that Baltimore has its own culture and image outside of Maryland. I want to learn so much more about the uprising and your role as a social worker. But before we even go there, how did you know about, because of course you went to Johnson C. Smith University, got your BSW, but a lot of people don't even know what social work is before they go into, their major. How did you know that you wanted to be a social worker?
So, sometimes you meet social workers and they say, I've experienced the social services system. I actually saw Losing Isaiah, and I thought, I'm getting up there right in age. So some people might not know who that is or what that is, but it was a movie with Halle Berry, for those who don't know. And Halle Berry lost her son, gave up her son, a little bit of both. And she was in a space of trying to get her child back. And I thought every social worker in the movie was horrible. So I said, I'm going to be a social worker. And I literally decided to go to school to be a social worker and 2.5 degrees in social work. So literally Losing Isaiah was my turning point, and I never turned back. I said, I'm going to be a social worker.
Isn't that something? And you know what? I've talked to so many social workers, and I've asked them that question probably over 100 times, and never has anyone said a movie inspired them to join this profession. And I used to show movies and teaching and supervision, and that was never a movie I thought to show, but it is a great concept to show movies to social workers or to up and coming social workers about what not to do.
Right, for sure.
Especially with, people of color, and how to serve them in their communities.
Right, exactly. Yeah. For sure. And that's what it was for me. I was like, okay, great. This is what I'm going to study. And I never turned back.
That is amazing. And Johnson C. Smith had a BSW program?
They do. So Smith is located in Charlotte, North Carolina, and they have a Bachelor's of Social Work program. And I graduated in 2013. So now I'm a part of the alumni chapter in Baltimore. So I do a lot with them to still support the school. And I go back, and I'm a guest lecturer when I go back. So it's definitely a small school. So if you came to our campus, we knew that you didn't go there. That's how small it was. But yes, Johnson C. Smith changed my entire life. So I definitely appreciate them forever.
How did you decide to pick that school?
I only looked at HBCU. So I told my mother, if I'm going to school, I'm only going to an HBCU. And I thought North Carolina was hot year round because I'm originally from the South Bronx. And then we moved to Buffalo in the latter part of my childhood. So when we moved to Buffalo, if you don't know, Buffalo is all snow. And I said, I'm going somewhere that's hot year round. And I thought North Carolina was hot year round. It's not, but it's not Buffalo. So it worked for me. So I chose Johnson C. Smith.
Wow, you went a long way from home and you went to the South. Was that a culture shock for you?
Yes. So people assumed that we were from like DC. I was so offended back then. I was like, DC, I'm a New Yorker. And you know, New Yorkers think they're the best people in the world. I mean, we are, but still. So it was a culture shock because there were different things that were expected in the South that were different from up North. So respect itself actually looked different. Religion looked different. So I grew up in a space where my mother was exploring what her religion was, and she allowed us to explore that as well. But I didn't go to church consistently. So I'll never forget my freshman year, I accidentally led a demonstration. So what happened was they practiced a new thing called boot camp. And boot camp, they had things that were mandatory for freshmen to go to under the new administration. And one of the things that was mandatory was to go to church. And I've always grew up in advocacy. So I asked the question in our public forum, how can you make someone go to church? Because you don't know if everyone goes to church. And it wasn't just because of me not going consistently. It was because there might be someone who's Muslim, for example, or someone who is of a different faith. What does that look like? And the response was, oh, because you're an atheist. And I was like, oh my goodness, I've never experienced or heard anybody accuse me of that before. So this is the accidental demonstration part. So I walked out, but when I walked out, I didn't know everyone was going to walk out. So I walked out and all of the freshman class also walked out. So I did end up accidentally leading that demonstration. But it was definitely a culture shock in that aspect. And it was something everybody remembered. But it was a culture shock there. But it also, I'm very big on honoring my mother. So when I met people who were saying like ma'am and sir, I was raised to believe that we say that if we are going to say that, it's for other Black people. It's not for people who are not Black because it comes with a different connotation. But I did pick that up. So now I say that all the time. And people are like, oh my gosh, please stop saying that to me. But it's something that I didn't want people to think my mother didn't raise me right. So that is something I picked up and something I valued a lot. And I liked the biggest culture shock was everybody speaks. So that was the biggest thing. Like strangers will speak to you, people will speak to you. And that was the biggest thing because being originally from the Bronx and then moving to Buffalo, we mind our business, we keep moving, we move real fast. So in that people don't walk. That was a lot. Like a lot of the students don't walk and I walked everywhere. So I believed I could walk anywhere. We tried it one time and we realized that we cannot walk everywhere. We learned quick. We just turned around. We didn't even make it halfway, but it was a culture shock, but it was something I'll always value because there are different things from the North and the South and from different places in the world that I do value and agree with. So
you were born a social worker, weren't you? It's your freshman year and you already are accidentally having demonstrations and you hadn't even taken your first social work class. You were literally born a social worker. I love that.
But it wasn't my first protest. So I actually protested in high school. And I grew up participating in the Million Women's March, the AIDS walks and things like that. So I grew up that way. And I guess I just thought it was how I grew up. And then I realized, no, this is exactly who I am. So, yeah. So in high school, we protested because our school was closed. I went to an all-girls Catholic school. And we had the majority of Black people there. And our school was closing, but we had low enrollment. So I was a part of a protest there so we can try and stay open. We didn't stay open, but it was a great experience. And lifelong friends, that's for sure. I'm actually at my best friend's wedding that I met that year. So
that is awesome. And you learned at such a young age that your voice does matter and that you can create change.
Exactly. For sure.
And you can be a leader in change.
Right. Yes, for sure.
Which is the NASW's tagline this year, leading change. And you've been doing that for years now.
For sure. So I went to a very racist high school. My second high school was very racist. So my mother always instilled in us that Black was the thing to be. So being Black was beautiful. My uncle also instilled that in us. God bless the dead. He was a 5 percenter. So being Black was something that was just always something that was valuable to us in these spaces that weren't made for us. So by the time I got to University of Maryland, it was a reminder, but it was still an experience there just on a larger level. So it was a reminder about high school, but it was also one of those things where I knew I could do it because I've already experienced this at 15.
Yeah. And let's talk about that. One, I want to know, how did you know? Because a lot of people get their undergraduate and they're like, okay, I'm done with school. And you got your BSW. In Alabama, you can actually get licensed at the BSW level. So a lot of people just stop. But you went on and got your MSW. One, it feels like you have very intentional energy. So you intentionally sought out at HBCU for your undergrad. And now you go to this PWI. And I'm wondering, what was the intentionality behind that to get one? How did you know you won your MSW, and why Maryland?
So I always knew I wanted my doctorate degree. So I knew I needed to get my MSW to do that. And I only applied to the University of Maryland because I did not want to take my GRE. That was the only reason why I applied to University of Maryland, and I only looked at top 20 schools. So you are right. I was very intentional, but I only looked at top 20 schools. I really wanted to go to a HBCU. They all require the GRE, and it was more important to me not to take that. So that's why I chose Maryland. It was the only school I applied to. I had no backup plan, and I was not going back to Buffalo, New York. So
I love that. Yeah. And so then here you are. And a PWI after having this beautiful HBCU experience. And I'm curious, like, what was that experience for you, especially having a foundation in social work as at an HBCU, which I'm probably assuming there might have been some Afrocentric teaching within the social work spaces. And here you are at PWI. Talk to me about your MSW experience through that lens.
So there was definitely not an Afrocentric lens at the University of Maryland. There were a lot of people in the program who switched careers. So there weren't, I actually didn't meet a lot of people who, even Black people, I didn't meet a lot of people who knew that social work was what they wanted to do. It was their second career, or they felt like it was an easy thing to do and things of that nature. University of Maryland actually didn't start developing cultural competency until, so my second year at university, I did the 2-year program, and I only did the 2-year program because I was told that my internship hours weren't equivalent to the University of Maryland standard. And I knew I only applied to Maryland. So I said, okay, but it wasn't true. But I said, look, this is the only school I applied to, and I'm not going back to the snow. So I will stay here. And this is what it is. So the second year was when Freddie Gray was killed. And when Freddie Gray was killed, unfortunately, it was also when Mike Brown was killed. So first, I believe it was Mike Brown. So I was the Organization of African-American Social Workers chair. So I was the chair of that organization at the University of Maryland, and we had a bulletin board at the School of Social Work. I always say that so people can understand the depth of it. And on this board, we put Mike Brown's name all over the board. And the next day, someone defaced the board in the School of Social Work at the University of Maryland, and they put Police Lives Matters and Firefighters Lives Matters, and they crossed out Mike Brown's name at the time. So that was something that happened at the University of Maryland in the School of Social Work. And there were advocates who were already working on cultural competency classes and courses. So those did eventually come into place after I graduated. But that's the experience at University of Maryland. And then when Freddie Gray was killed, most people that worked at the University of Maryland lived in different parts of Maryland. They didn't live in Baltimore. They were scared to go places in Baltimore. They were scared to actually serve Baltimore City people. And they closed the school due to the quote unquote riots. And I've never thought I would be walking next to tanks and in the country, I suppose, but also in Baltimore City, I'm walking next to tanks. So it's something that it came natural because we had to do what we needed to do, but it also reminded you that this is the life we live. We are walking next to tanks that are not protecting us, but they're protecting buildings. So it was the culture of the city and in the university, rather, of what that looked like. I think that people believe social work is easy. until it's time to talk to somebody who might want to die by suicide. Then it's like, oh, what do I do about that, right? Or even macro. I feel like they put macro in, but I was clinical macro, so I wanted the experience of both, because I did get to study abroad at Johnson C. Smith on a full scholarship, and I did get to study abroad on a full grant at the University of Maryland. And that one was interdisciplinary, and a lot of people did not know what social workers did. So it was very interesting to be a part of the community there, but it was also, it was not a good experience for me personally. I did not have community at the University of Maryland. You are used to seeing people for 4 years straight. So nobody actually prepares you for graduating from college as far as seeing your friends, because my best friend in college was from Florida. So it was, I'm used to seeing you since we were 18, and now I'm never going to see you, or I'm not going to see you for months at a time. So I think that was a culture shock. And then being a part of these systems, knowing that we live in a city that's beautiful, that's right here, that people are honoring. So people pick and choose who they want to be social workers for, which to a certain extent we all should in a certain way, but people pick and choose who deserves a social worker and who doesn't.
You preaching, ain't you, Portia? Come on through. And you know what? One of the things I was talking to, I have the honor of supervising some social workers here in Alabama, and one of them said, I thought all social workers were nice. And I've learned, and I've been doing this now for, this will be my 25th year. I've learned some of the meanest people
yes,
are
absolutely.
Social workers.
I agree.
And we do not talk about that, because you're absolutely right. And, you know, let's be frank right now. You know, the profession is still 67% white women.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And they're serving people who are disenfranchised, who usually look like you and I. And right. So, you know, again, picking and choosing who to serve social welfare is the history of social work. You know,
right.
Policing okay. families is the history of social work. And we
right.
don't talk enough about that. And for you to experience that defacing of the bulletin in the School of Social Work.
Right.
At such an early part of your career, you got to see what this profession looks like.
Right, precisely, for sure. And of course, there were people that were helpful at the University of Maryland. However, the experience was something that was not a grand one for me, especially because I did the 2-year program, and everything I learned my first year, I learned at Johnson C. Smith and then some. So it was great that I did have that foundation, because we did also have people who said that, oh, your HBCU degree is not going to be as great. And in actuality, I was ahead of the game. So there were things to this day that I learned about social work practice that I incorporate from Johnson C. Smith that we don't talk about at the University of Maryland. So, for example, backing in was something I learned at Johnson C. Smith. Nobody talked about backing in at the University of Maryland, but being in Baltimore, you need to back in. So you need to back in so you can go ahead and get out as soon as possible if you need to get out as soon as possible. So things like that, real social work practice and what that looks like outside of the folder.
Outside of theory. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm loving your social work journey thus far. And what I heard you say is that you have 2.5 degrees. So is the third degree also in social work?
So the third degree is still pending. We are working on that. We're actively working on that. But the third degree is in social work. It's the doctorate in social work.
And is it okay to share the university experience you're having now?
Sure. So I actually go to school online.
Okay.
So it's been an interesting experience as well. I think that the university has been in a space where there's certain support that you get and certain support you're not getting and certain support that you should be getting. And you have to develop your own community. So I have one of my classmates, for lack of better terms, we're not really in cohorts, but it would be like a cohort. She has been the most influential, and I've never even seen her in person. So things like that, you have to build your own community and really build your life outside of the program so that you can be whole, so you can finish. So I'm hoping that by this conference I will be done, but time will tell.
You'll probably be done. You're very intentional. You like, I set a goal, I'm gonna meet it. So yeah, I can see that you're gonna be done. I love that. And I, you know, I, one of the questions I usually ask, and I wasn't planning on asking you, but I love, the reason I started this podcast was because I realized you know, during the pandemic and being a solo practitioner, the importance of social work community, how much I loved it and how much I missed it, and being able to create my own virtual community by doing this. And that's what I hear you saying through your doctor degree, is you are creating a virtual community to help you get through that process as well.
Right, for sure. And I absolutely agree with you. It's a different level of community when it comes to the social work field, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you've had three very, very different experiences with your BSW, your MSW, now your doctorate. And I think that is what makes you such a well-rounded social worker, is to have such diverse experiences.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I agree. I think that all of them have shaped me for sure. I would still love to get another degree from HBCU, but I'm probably not going back to school. This is enough. But I like the fact that I can teach at HBCU. So
absolutely,
that is something that I am thankful for.
Yeah. Now, you said Baltimore made you the great social work you are today, and you talked about the uprising. Just a couple of minutes, what has your experience outside of the academic world as, like you said, a real life social worker, especially in Baltimore, what has that experience been like for you?
So I've done a lot of different things in social work. So I'm not a community-based social worker anymore. I started off with being a school-based clinician and a community-based clinician, an office-based clinician, a clinician in all the spaces where I was sent. So I've worked with different ages in different, all of the schools, really, elementary, middle, and high school. So I think the last time I was in the school, I was in two different schools. I was in a few high schools, and I was also in a middle school at the same time, pre-COVID. And then during the lockdown, I was still in the schools. And then during the lockdown, I removed myself from school-based therapy, and I went to private practice. Social work has been very interesting. I've been in detention centers. I think I really just enjoy listening to people who want to be listened to. And a lot of people don't even realize they want to be listened to. And I think that's been the best thing about being a social worker in Baltimore. However, I think you get experiences extremely young consistently here. So some things that I feel other social workers might get in different cities and areas, even in Maryland, they might get experiences here and there, and we get experiences back to back. So gun violence is something that is huge here, unfortunately, like a Chicago, a Detroit, a Philly, a Baltimore. These places will experience high rates of gun violence, and it comes back to back, and it's impacting ages young to old. So being in a space of being that type of social worker, where there's a page here called, and I don't know if it still exists, but it was called Murder Inc. on Instagram, and they would just post different people who passed away in different situations that happened. So there have been times where, and it's so many, so there have been times where you could just be scrolling and it could be your client. So what does that look like? Or you hear, okay, this happened, so be prepared for tomorrow when we go to school and we have to respond to this emergency response. So being in that space, but encountering so many young people or people of different ages that are impacted by gun violence, and you being the person that has to respond to it as often as we do.
Thank you for the work you're doing. Thank you for the work you're doing. And it also just sounds like, you know, maybe 1 year in one city for you is like 7 years in social work. Dog years. Yeah.
Right.
Thank you for the work you're doing.
I'm more so on the macro side now, so I do appreciate that. I think the mental health comes out differently on this side, because you're reading it back to back to back. And a lot of what I'm reading now is more so about suicidality and psychosis as far as the macro type of work. So,
yeah. And in fact, that was my next question. Where do you want to go in social work? What are your plans?
So I think the best thing about social work is that you can do so much. And I've done everything I've wanted to do in social work. I think my mind has been, oh, my end goal. And the end goal came a little faster than I thought. So my new, I guess, quote unquote, and not new, it's always been the goal, is to actually, Johnson C. Smith has an MSW program now, but it's in person. So when I was in school, they were actually interviewing us about what we would want in an MSW program. And now they actually have the program. And I think that's amazing. But I wasn't going to wait to get my MSW for them to launch the program. So I would actually like to, they don't have an online program, and I would like to be a part of launching their online program. So that's my end goal, whatever it takes to be a part of launching their MSW program, but more so about field placement and being director of field education. So that's something I'm interested in.
Absolutely. And that ties back into your experience of leaving C. Smith, Johnson C. Smith, and going to another university and them saying it's not, you know, whatever. And you're like, yes, it was. And now right. Going back 360 or 180, I'm a social worker, not a mathematician, and going back and saying, this is what field placement needs to look like so that it's equivalent to wherever anyone decides to go to. It right. feels like that's perfect for you. I love that. That's going to happen. You're very intentional. So
thank you. I appreciate that.
The next time
I've been
talk
a field
to
instructor and I'm teaching field education now. So it's something that I was like, actually, this is exactly what I want to do. So I'm
that's
looking forward
perfect.
To it one day.
Yeah, that's perfect. It's definitely going to happen. Oh, thank you for sharing your social work journey. I love that. Oh man, that was such a nice surprise. I wasn't expecting such a diverse experience, but it's pretty amazing. Again, thank you so much for the work you've done and the work that you are doing. You are absolutely needed in this profession.
I appreciate that.
But the reason we're here is because of the Affirming Our Presence Behavioral Health Conference. And yes. Just curious, why did you decide to submit a speaker proposal?
So I did submit a speaker proposal. And to be honest, I cannot remember which topic I submitted. I am a panelist this year, and last year I presented. So last year I presented on Social Work Your Way, teaching social workers how to be a social worker and be exactly who they are, but mixing the two and what they're interested in. So I had the honor of doing that. Jasmine actually found me on social media and she asked me the first year, but I had I used to have a shop as well. So with my shop, I had a vending event and I was like, I can't do it. But the next year I'm in there and she stuck to her word. I appreciate her for being a woman of her word. She invited me back and I was a presenter last year. So this year she invited me to be a panelist. So I'm definitely honored to be a panelist and I'm glad because I can sit and be a panelist versus having to present. I was also a vendor last year, and I will say that the energy, everything about the conference was amazing. That was the best vending experience I had ever in my business. And I've had my business for a little while, but I closed it in 2023, December 2023. So I will say the conference was amazing. The vibes were amazing. The people were amazing. And Texas is hot. but it was great. So I am a panelist this year, and I'm excited about that.
Awesome. And you and the other panelists are starting the whole thing off, which is even more exciting. Yeah. Cause
for
you
sure.
Guys are kicking it off for us.
The pressure is on, but yes.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be amazing. It is definitely going to be amazing. Portia, how did you find out about the conference to begin with?
So Jasmine found me on social media and during her first year, she said, she found me on social media. I did all my own marketing for my business. So I was active on social media a lot. And my logo was actually this woman with big hair. She had a big nose like me. I even told the person who created my logo, make the nose bigger. Like, this is a Black girl. I want her nose bigger. I want everybody to know this is big and that's okay. So she found me on social media and she messaged me and asked if I could come to the first conference. And I had a vending event. So I told her no. And then she came back the second year and she said, are you still interested? So she asked me, I submitted a proposal and my proposal was Social Work Your Way. And then I presented for two, I think I presented both days and then, or maybe I presented one day twice. I presented twice. So I know I presented twice. And then I was also a vendor for the event. So that's how I found out about the conference and now I'm able to share it with others and I'm coming back again as a panelist. So it's very exciting.
That is exciting. Why do you feel spaces like this are necessary?
I think social workers, especially social workers, need to create space in the mental health world because so many people think that we're small. So they like to either pay us less than what we deserve, or I've encountered counselors who say, oh, well, I mean, you can't do counseling. Actually, we can. We are just learning our modalities differently, and we look at the we look at the person differently, but we can absolutely do therapy and go into private practice. But I've been in so many spaces where people try to make social workers small. So just like we were talking about earlier, we need that community. Like the community you're creating with your podcast is something that's like, a breath of fresh air for people. And sometimes we need that and we don't go after it, or we don't know where to find it. So this being in this space is necessary because we can create that community. Even people who were just coming by, or even staff that were working in the hotel last year, were like, this is amazing. Like there are so many Black people here talking about the things that they're talking about or experiencing different things, and just giving that vibe and community that we need, especially in a world where they want to pit us together, when we don't have to be pit against one another. We can show up and show out as ourselves with each other and for each other.
That's it. Yeah. It's like an Essence Fest in Texas.
Yes, that's what it is for sure. And it gets bigger and better every time.
Yes, I love it. I do. Do you know what your panel discussion is going to be about? Or have you guys already been talking about what the theme of the panel discussion will be like?
So the panel will actually focus on continuing to affirm your presence. So I don't want to give the questions, but they will be about what does it look like to affirm your presence, and what does that look like from each of the panelists' viewpoints, and also the different questions that they have about how we can do that and maintain our mental health and things like that within our communities.
Absolutely. That's going to be awesome. Why do you think it's important to affirm our presence?
I think because people want to make us small, and we're the largest things in life. We're the largest people in life. So we get to affirm our presence. We don't have to, but we get to. We get to be in a space where we affirm our presence, where we're reminding ourselves that we're supposed to be here. We were made to be here, and nobody gets to be like us. I feel like, me personally, I feel like Black women endure the most out of everybody in the world because we protect everyone. People want to be like us, but they want to make us small. There's so much that comes against Black women, and sometimes we are all we have. And sometimes we have to decide, no, I'm going to affirm my presence because you actually need me more than I need you. And that's okay. So I think it's necessary for us to do that because that's what keeps us going, but it also keeps the world going and flowing too.
I already said it. You preaching tonight, Portia. You are preaching tonight. I love it. I'm going to take a second and pull back from the conference for a minute. And I want to talk about what you're doing. What I heard you say that you just closed your shop or your business, but I know you have got to be, when one thing ends, another thing begins. So what are some of the things that you're doing, businesses, companies, successes that you have going on right now?
For sure. So the one thing I would say is that I'm a God girl. So I'm a glory girl or what have you. And I followed what God told me to do. And he was like, it's time for you to close this business. And that's okay. And I was actually happy. I was like, okay, well, if I have to close this business, you're the one who gave it to me in the first place. So this is what I'll do. I am focusing on graduating. So I'm hoping to graduate and focus on that. But I was doing private practice and I was doing my shop, but I actually never wanted to do therapy full time. I used to say that in undergrad all the time, but then I became a therapist and I realized, actually, I'm good at this. Like, I'm great at this. This is what it looks like. I still do see clients, but my goal was to do speaking engagements like panel discussions and to do CEU trainings and things like that. So hopefully one day I'll be moving that in that direction as far as panel discussions, but I show up as a social worker in the spaces that I'm in. So for example, the Johnson C. Smith University Baltimore Alumni Chapter, I can show up in that space. What does it look like to either recruit current students or future students? I'm the scholarship committee chair there. So we're having a fundraiser, and this has been the biggest fundraiser I have done as far as Johnson C. Smith and what that looks like. But it also allows me to continue sharing who Smith is and how it made me a social worker. but I'm also in spaces where, so when it comes to Greek life, for example, I can show up there and I can say, well, when we speak about health in general, let's remember we need to speak about mental health. What does that look like? So the spaces that I'm in, I'm able to show up that way, and I appreciate those experiences. But I'm also a panelist at another conference, which is a dental conference. And I love showing up in spaces that don't think about social workers or mental health, because I get to show you how it relates to your profession too. And hopefully a husband, but I enjoy this space because everyone is going to be there speaking about dental things and what that looks like. But how are you taking care of yourself while you're taking care of everyone else and what that looks like? So I appreciate those type of spaces and showing up in that way. And honestly, I'm always a leader. So I wanted to be in a space where I got to focus on what life looks like to fulfill me. But people are still able to find me and follow me on LinkedIn. And I've never been, well, I don't want to say I'm not a master of anything, but I've had people say like, oh, you need to be a master of something and not a jack of all trades. But do I really? Because it's great that I get the experience in all these different places and I can choose what I would like to master. But some people only master one thing and they miss out on all the experiences of everything else. So I like to be in that space, and I'm trying to figure out what life looks like next. So my research is actually on how social workers can respond to community gun violence. And I do want to be in that aspect of continuing to do different strategies, but on a macro lens. So hopefully another business will come soon. It won't be this year, that's for sure. But maybe next year a business will come soon, but it'll more so be on training materials and trainings and things like that.
I love it. Yeah, we need the students to become the teachers now. And that's what it sounds like. Yeah. And we're going to be calling you Dr. Rouse soon.
I hope so.
This year, 2024. Yes.
I'm just claim it. Amen.
Yes, it's already done. And it also sounds like you don't allow other people to put you in a box, and you create your own boxes that you would like to enjoy if you so wish.
Absolutely. For sure. I think the world tries to make you small. And I won't say that I've never been in a space where I let the world win, but I am in a space where I don't want them to win. And I don't want anybody to look at me and think that I've never been in that space, but I don't want them to sit in the space and think that they never can get out of the space. So.
Yes. And, I was thinking while you were talking, the clients that you saw, the ones that you still see, they're really blessed to have you. And even Johnson C. Smith, in the role that you're playing with them, they are very, very, very blessed to have you. So I just wanted to make sure I said that too. Portia, what is one belief about social work that you started on this journey with that you feel has changed the most for you?
Ooh, that has changed the most. That's a great question. Let's see. I think that the one belief that I still have is that you can do so much in social work. I think the belief changed as far as how I'm going to go about it. So for me, I've learned throughout this journey that I can leave sooner than I have. So I've stayed in spaces where I feel like, well, there's so much more for me to do. But I've learned that you can actually leave sooner and you can still show up differently this way. So the one thing for a while, I was like, well, I don't want to move out of Baltimore because I want to serve the city. Or if I'm not a community-based social worker anymore, am I still that Baltimore social worker? But if it wasn't for the second graders who taught me about what life was in Baltimore and what it looks like to be jumped in second grade, then what would that look like? And that was my first client. Or if it wasn't the clients that I've had who related to me because their fathers were incarcerated and they got to experience somebody who looks like them, who's there to help them, and also who experiences the same things that they experience, then I wouldn't be able to do all of these things in different spaces. And I wouldn't be able to bring it back to people and also give them the idea that they can do it too, that you can do all things. So I think that leaving spaces sooner is something that I've learned in social work, and that it's okay to pivot. Versus being in a space that says, oh, you left the city. It's kind of like people who leave their quote unquote hood. Like, am I still good because I left the hood? You're still good because you can serve differently. And because those experiences changes somebody else's mindset. And that's the best thing about it.
Absolutely. I hope somebody listens. There's so many social workers I want to hear just this part in itself, because I talk to social workers who don't want to leave their clients, or they feel like their agency needs them. But you saying you can leave and it's okay. Right. To leave, and you can even serve in a greater, bigger way by leaving. but right. they feel like they have to stay where they are, and leaving sooner than you expected to is such an important part of the social work journey.
Yes, or you will burn out.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will. I love that. That was such a great answer. Oh, it's been such a joy getting to do this with you. I'm so glad you said yes. I really am. But we are getting to our last question. And so last two questions, I'll say. Mm-hmm. What are you looking forward to the most from attending the conference? And what do you hope attendees will gain from attending your panel discussion or the conference in general?
I think I'm looking forward to possibly seeing the people that I've seen last year, not necessarily people I might remember or not remember, but people who were in a space that says, this is what I did last year and this is what I'm doing now. I think I'm also interested in seeing new people as well. So as far as students or people who are in the field of social work, either new or seasoned, and just learning different experiences. So I love listening to people's experiences and what it looks like. I've learned there is a difference as far as, especially like Northern social workers, Southern social workers, California social workers, because California is strict, okay? But just being in a space amongst people and energy, I think that it was very refreshing to be in this space last year. So I'm looking forward to feeling that again. And I think that I would want people to leave with something. So don't come in a space and feel like you have to get this one thing and that's it. Or don't come and just do this event and not do anything else. But be open-minded and come to receive whatever it is that you're supposed to receive. Because sometimes you're so focused. I know you said I'm very intentional, but sometimes I'm like, no, this is what I came for. This is what I need to do. But sometimes what I actually needed wasn't even what I came for. So being in that type of space and open to hearing everybody and their experiences. And the last thing I would say is just to remember that I'm a Baltimore social worker. And Baltimore social workers can do anything. That means I can be a social worker anywhere. And I can do all things because I started in Baltimore, and that Baltimore is a city that Lamar wants to stay here because Baltimore is the city that was made up of strength. So Baltimore Strong is a true thing. And I just love being a part of this city. It's a little ruthless, but I understand why. And I understand that it's a survival tactic and that Baltimore is more than survival. It thrives.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love what you said, that social workers are coming from all over the nation. Mm-hmm. And, one of my social workers just did a CU event on the compact license. And she was talking about how different states historically have different things that their clients are affected by. Like New Yorkers have something like, you know, you're from New York, they have the Disabilities Act that they were affected by with all the group homes. Louisiana, like we talked about, New Orleans has Katrina. There's so many different things that social workers are dealing with that we may not be dealing with in the state or cities that we live in. And so being able to bring all these social workers from multiple different states, and for us to be able to take our CEs back to our home state from Texas. Right. I think Jasmine doing that, I think, is a big deal. These aren't just Texas-based CEs. These are national CEs. It's a big deal. So not only are we going to get to learn about how social workers are social working in different states and areas than we live in, but we get to take those CEs back home with us. So that's a big deal. Do you have any final words of wisdom or advice you would like to leave our audience with today, Portia?
Oh, I think the final words I would say is that you can do different things in social work, and it's okay to start over and try something new. So now I'm doing utilization review. And I love it. It could pay a little bit more, but I love doing this one because I love working remotely. But I think I would say that you can do different things in social work, and it's okay to try something new. You don't have to just stay in what that specialty is or your niche. If you want to try something else in social work provides that for you, and it's okay to go after it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yay. Portia, thank you so much for joining the Goddesses of Social Work podcast today. It has been a pleasure. It really has.
Thank you. I appreciate you so much. You're amazing. And I hope that all of these continue to go well, but I know they will because you're the host.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. We are glad you were here. If you like this episode, please come back to hear more stories of the journeys through social work, and please leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. See you next time here on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast.